roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday, ready to talk some MMA after a great weekend of fights that included KOs, a submission, only one, some controversial decisions, the refs as well. You know, they had to make some tough choices because there was some fouls that were committed. So we're going to unpack UFC Fight Night 187 with Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad involved in that main event. That's where a lot of the controversy is. That's where we'll spend some time as we recap the event. Will give you all the winners and losers. We'll tell you who the bonuses went to, who's 50K richer. You got to imagine Dan Ige. You can't go around with a nickname 50K and not believe that he's in the running, right? Also, we got two guests today. Tyson Chartier, a 2020 co-coach of the year on MMA Junkie's year-end awards. He shared that with Eric Nixick. He'll be on today's show. He manages fighters like Calvin Kattar and Rob Font. We'll also talk to Mark Ratner, a VP in the UFC, one of the head honchos over there. He is the vice president of regulatory affairs, governmental and regulatory affairs. So we'll talk to him a little bit about these controversies that have taken place in the past few weekends and these high-profile fights, as well as Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and talking about the late Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who we lost this past Saturday. As you all know, Ratner's career in combat sports started in the boxing world when he was the Nevada State Athletic Commission's executive chairman. So he actually oversaw a lot of the Marvin Hagler fights. Actually, at the time, he may have actually been one of the commission officials. If I'm not mistaken, we'll have to ask him where his career overlapped Marvin Hagler's. He put up a really, really cool ticket from the Hagler Leonard fight. So we'll ask him about that. And of course, some MMA questions. It's going to be a fun show today. Thank you again for joining us live here on Sportscaster Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. If you're watching us right now, you're watching us live and we're ready to get going here. MMA Junkie Radio, Monday, March 15th. Prior to the UFC Fight Night 187 card, we did hear about the passing of Marvin Hagler. Goz, any quick thoughts on the loss of the former middleweight champ, the one they called Marvelous?
He might be my favorite boxer of all time. He's definitely in that top three. But he's a guy that just, like, I have my little bucket list, and it's always been to meet him. And I never got the opportunity to meet him because he lived most of his life in Italy. And then he has another house here in the States. So he's just definitely, he was so much fun to watch when you listen to the history of his career and even the way he kind of conducted himself. It was just different at the time. It was really, really cool. And he's one of those fighters that would just always put pressure, always come forward. And he could hit you with a big shot, but he was technical about it. You know, he wasn't just throwing bombs out there. So it was great. And at least once a year, I probably watch him and Leonard again. And I always have a different opinion every time I watch it. But that was just one of the funnest fights. And you could really say that was probably two of the greatest fighters in that division at that time. It was perfect time, perfect place, unlike what we get here in boxing where, you get one guy that's past his prime and then, oh, okay, I'll fight him, you know, that sort of thing. That didn't happen. He was one of the four kings. That was great. And big news in the boxing world today. We'll probably get to that in a little bit too.
That's right. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, they signed apparently to do a like a home and away series. They're both Brits, but you know what I mean. They're just going to fight and try and unify all the belts. So am I excited about that? No, I'd like to just see them fight once. And if we have a clear winner, I don't need to see it again. We got other heavyweights. I think we can still, you know, kind of rotate it. But I suppose it's not a bad idea for it to just be a possibility. You know, almost every boxing match that takes place, there's the rematch clause that gets negotiated. So it's almost like that's what it is, but it's never really been announced this way. My memories of Marvin Hagler were, yes, the Hagler-Hearns fight for sure. Craziest 3 minutes you'll ever see. Sorry, craziest three rounds you'll ever see in boxing. Hard to really top it. Is it one of the greats? No. I mean, it is, but it's probably like in my top 10 because those fights that back in the day used to go like 15 rounds, along with everything that's taken place since then, it would probably be in my top 10. But for sure, as far as like just three rounds, you know, even fights that went less than five or six rounds, it doesn't have to be specific to three. That was insane. I don't think they could have made it past six rounds at that pace, honestly. You'll just never forget that one. And then Hagler Hearns was a very nice buildup between a power puncher and a more skilled, precise, scientific boxer. And it was almost like a good guy and a bad guy, you know, like Sugar Ray was just kind of like beloved, and Marvin Hagler was, I think, more like the street tough kid, you know what I mean? So there was a bunch of storylines behind that one. I've watched it many times as well. However, I think of the 10 times I've watched it, I think maybe the first one or two I may have thought, man, maybe Hagler did have these, but at least the last five or so that I've watched, I'm more than ever convinced that Ray Leonard deserved to win that. Ghost talked about Hagler living in Italy. He was so disgusted with that fight, the result of that fight, that he moved to Italy. He really took that loss hard. And that's why stateside, you didn't see him as much, I guess, as you see other fighters, whether it just be them showing up at other fights, you know, or just being part of pop culture, I guess, or sports culture, whatever you want to call it. You didn't see much of that with Marvin Hagler. But that's just the type of guy that he was. I mean, he was a true prize fighter who, I guess, the pain of losing that fight hurt him so much, he wanted to just get away from it all here in the United States and become a little bit less, I guess, lesser well-known celeb or athlete. I mean, Johnny Depp, I think, has done something similar as well, you know, from the world of acting. But regardless, what a huge loss, 68 years of age. Still nothing clear-cut as far as, like, how he passed away. We heard his heart failed. We heard he battled coronavirus. I, you know, without having a true autopsy, I don't think we'll know. So let's not just fall for any of the rumors that are out there. There's even some attached to him not reacting well to a vaccine. But again, those are all rumors. I think we'll have to wait and be respectful towards the family once the autopsy comes through. Anyway, so yeah, Mark Radner, we'll talk a little bit with him about Marvin Hagler. And we'll also talk with him about these fouls that are just happening. Goes in the main event of UFC Fight Night 187. We had an eye poke that stopped the fight. Leon Edwards poked Bilal Muhammad as he was getting to throw a kick. He's getting ready to throw a kick. His left hand extended. In fact, his left hand extended, not even like in a defensive posture, in an offensive posture where technically he might as well just thrown a punch with his fist closed. Mm-hmm. It almost seemed like a tool he was using to measure, you know, what it is he wanted to do, or maybe he switched his mind, that, you know, halfway through the strike. I don't know, but boy, man, it was brutal, that eye poke. Bilal Muhammad collapsed to the floor, writhing in pain. We kind of knew, I think, that this one was one of those that was going to just – he wasn't going to come back from them. And do we want them to? I don't know. That could be a whole other question. Do we really want them coming back from these brutal knees, these brutal eye pokes? You know, we wait so long to get some of these fights. But in the end, man, anything that seems to be over 10 seconds – you just get the feeling that probably this fight shouldn't continue, because I think a fighter knows when they can clear it, and it's just it's not as big of a blow as we all think, you know. But just give me some time to just rinse the eye out, and I'll get back to fighting. Or if you got need, but you think you can shake it off, you'll know if you have your footing, if everything's not, you know, rotating or around you, or you're seeing a blank screen. But for the most part, those fights just kind of probably they need to come to a halt. And how the ref and doctors and the commissions handle it, that's what's up for questioning. Anyway, react to this fight with Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad. The eye pokes, terrible.
Yeah, no, I think you said it best. Like, it was kind of a strange situation because a lot of eye pokes come from fighters playing defense, you know, against the takedown, a last second movement in front of their opponent. They stick their hand out and try and stop a takedown. This one all kind of just came from Leon's side. It didn't really make much sense, but it was a different level of an eye poke. It was almost an eye gouge. You know, that whole finger practically went into his eye. And you can tell there's a couple things when these type of fouls happen is that fighter, that person's credit report kind of gets put out there, right? What have we seen in the past from this individual? Is it pretty straight guy, pretty straightforward with everything they say, or do they embellish sometimes? Bilal Muhammad is pretty straightforward guy, you know? So when you see him writhing around in pain like that, for me, I think even more like, geez, dude, this guy must be destroyed. And it was just a different level of pain, the kind where even 10 seconds in, I really did not want to see him come back and fight anymore, because at that point, if he was in that much pain, I don't remember anything in my lifetime being hurt that bad and then just being able to turn it back on like that. Like, that just seems like something that needed to stop right then and there. And I'm glad it eventually did. But it sucks, you know, on both levels, because A, Bilal Muhammad, we see everything that he's put into his career, the chances that he's taken. And then you look at Leon Edwards and everything that's gone on with him, just trying to get him back in the cage. And finally, when we get him back in the cage, this is something that happened. So that's a little unfortunate as well. But at the end of the day, it's about these fighters' longevity. You want them to be able to do this for a long time. We talked about Marvelous Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard's career ended because of an eye injury. And back then, they didn't have the surgeries to correct the type of stuff. So it's very, very dangerous. You see, look at Michael Bisping, right? And him and his eye issue now. So I'm glad that the fight stopped. I don't know that we need to go back and watch it again or any of that type of stuff, but it was the right call at the moment, and it's just super, super unfortunate to end a card that way.
Think about how compromised the fighter is. I mean, I don't know that I would want Bilal Muhammad to continue. I mean, I suppose if he can pretty much shake it off quickly and said, I'll be okay, give me a second to just rub this thing out. Because all of us have gotten poked in different situations, and it has nothing to do with combat sports, you know, just in different ways. We've done it to ourselves, I guess, accidentally, or even just as silly as it sounds, when you've gotten something in your eyes, you know, soap in your eyes in the shower or something, you can clear it in a certain amount of time, and you should be ready to, you know, continue a fight under those circumstances. But this one, man, he fell straight to the ground. We saw how horrible it was. And then going back to 2 weeks ago and I can't even remember. Last week and the Darren Stewart fight earlier this Saturday against Eric Anders, that knee, I mean, those were blatant knees. There was a hand and an arm in between the knee that Anders threw, but it's still connected with the head, and there was one angle they showed towards the end which really showed his head, boom, kind of like moving towards the cage, colliding with the cage. You know, there were certain angles where you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. His arm was there. Come on. Toughen up, kid, you know. And then there was others where you're like, oh, you know. But the strikes were both illegal as can be. And, I mean, what do we do? I don't know. That's something we're going to discuss a little bit more with Mark Radner. But you really are a compromised fighter at that point. I think back to the movie Gladiator. Commodus knows he can't beat the Spaniard. You know, he's got to fight the Spaniard. And so that's Joaquin Phoenix's character, Commodus, versus the Spaniard, who is, I almost said Mel Gibson. It's, what's his face?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. He knows he can't beat him. So what do? Remember they stab him so that he was able to at least walk out there. So he didn't stab him, in a vital organ right away, but enough that he was bleeding and he was weakened. And then they were able to conceal the wound. And so now he was able to fight a compromised fighter, you know, half of a man, half of what he is. So his chances were a lot better. Of course, it didn't work out for him. But same thing here. Like, you just know that even if those fighters were to come back, they're not going to be the same. The discussion with the doctor, I'm starting to think the referee should almost have a bigger say. If the referee is handed the keys of the fight, he can stop it when he feels like one can't even continue. That means that without holding any form of a medical degree, we entrust this referee to make a big decision. Why wouldn't he already have a clear-cut idea if the fighter can continue? A lot of these guys not only train but have fought before, you know, so they have vital experience that the doctor won't have. And I'm seeing the doctors only come out and ask some of the most basic questions. Are you okay? Can you continue? You know, like that's almost, if it's a technicality, if it's a legal proceeding where the referee and the commission absolve themselves, you know, of a decision because at least a medical professional came in and he decided it, I guess. But honestly, these sequences are so confusing, the way they're unfolding, the way they're playing out. I don't know. I think things need to be buttoned up in that regard to avoid less confusion. And I honestly wouldn't mind seeing more specific language in the unified rules of MMA as well.
Yeah, man, it's really unfortunate, especially when you go back knowing that the week before something like that had happened, right? I would imagine, and we're going to speak to a coach pretty soon, but I would imagine that would even be drilled in your head even more. And that fight was a little infuriating for me because I like Eric Anders. I think he's a good guy. And that doesn't really fit his personality, but I thought there were a lot of moments where that fight was getting close to finishing, but he elected to shoot in instead. I think he had him really, really hurt. I don't even think he needed to really go down that route. So I think when he goes back and watches it, he's probably going to be pretty upset. But there are things that you can do, I guess, to maybe change rules and all that. But at the end of the day, sometimes that heat of the moment, I know it's a lot of people don't like to hear it because a lot of fighters don't succumb to it, but a lot do. And I'm sure if you look at your life at some point, you probably did something pretty stupid too. It just kind of happens. I'm shocked that it would happen that quickly after what had happened with Aljamain Sterling. As a fan, as a media member, you never want to see fights end that way. You want some kind of conclusion. But it's just the nature of our sport. And I don't know that there are very many things outside of just allowing the knee that we can do to fix that situation. I think it's just going to kind of happen.
Some would say allow the knee, you know. But, yeah, Ganders, that was a costly mistake. It probably cost him his win bonus. And he probably was in the running for a performance bonus because, I mean, he was lighting up Stewart pretty good. And then as far as Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling goes, that cost Peter Yan his title. What it boils down to goes, the most important thing out of all this was the referee, whether they think it's intentional or accidental. That's basically what it boils down to. From there, we go in different directions like a flow chart. If it's intentional, guy can't continue, you know, it's a DQ. If it's accidental, and the guy can't continue, then we can break it down to whether it's a no contest, no decision, or whether we go to the scoring, you know, which I can get more into when Mark Radner comes here. But basically, in a three-round fight, if they've completed two rounds, then they can judge those two rounds and partially the third round. The third round would be somewhere where the foul is occurs. And in a championship fight, the first three rounds, if it's accidental, then we have a no contest, no decision. But if it's rounds four and five, they can go to the partial scoring there and judge accordingly. But it would have to be accidental. And because Jan's was intentional, it doesn't fit under accidental. Therefore, they couldn't go to the judges' scorecards. We're learning more and more. All right, let's get to our first guest of the day, Tyson Chartier, 2020, MMA Junkies 2020 Co-Coach of the Year. There he is, the MMA Junkies 2020 Co-Coach of the Year. What's up, Tyson? How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good. And yourself?
Can't complain. You know, just going through the daily grind.
Is it me or does your background get more impressive each time? I mean, everything is – all these posters are hung up perfectly, symmetrically. You got a beautiful couch there. I love it, man.
That's the wife. She decorates it for me, and I just have to sit here and let you guys enjoy it. I'll do it.
It looks sharp, yeah. That hat, though, we can do without that. You're representing which one of the Boston teams?
I don't even know. This is just the label. It's a company that we work with for some of our collabs. Oh. They just gave me a hat. I don't even know what the logo
is. Like a B. Looks like a B to me.
Like a D or B? I don't know. I tried
to. Yeah, I'm ready to fire back. I'm ready to fire back here with Lakers.
Yeah, we're not having the best sports years lately, but. Yeah, we got spoiled for, you know, a good 20 years there. Now it's back to reality.
Yeah. How you doing, Coach? How's the cartel members? How are they doing?
Good. We just got back from Philly. You know, Tom Pagliarulo made his pro debut on CFFC last week on Fight Pass. And the second round, TKO, the other corner threw in towel. So it's nice to see the young blood getting in there and making a statement, you know, representing the cartel. And, you know, Rob's in camp as far as we're concerned. And Calvin's just, you know, he's getting back to it slowly. I'm just taking a very conservative approach to get him back into training after the Max fight. And yeah, I mean, it was good to get, you know, all of us on the road and just spend some time with just the boys. It was a nice little road trip.
Who are the cartel members outside of Cater and Font? I know there's a lot of young up and coming talent. So who are the ones that we love to, like we just did right now?
Yeah, so like Tom Pagliarulo just made his pro debut. He basically only trains with us full time. And then we have, like, you know, our jiu-jitsu coach Nick Fiore. He fights, but he's at another gym. He's kind of like sort of with us. And then we have all the coaches, you know, so we keep the circle really small by design, and then we're really picky with who we're going to let in and rep the cartel and stuff like that. And then we have a lot of people that just come cross train with us, guys I manage that, you know, technically represent another gym, but they're in with us, you know, sparring with Rob and Calvin and putting in the work. So as far as who's like would be fighting out of the cartel, it's just those three guys right now. And then we're kind of seeing, you know, what a growth strategy could be, you know, could look like and how we want to grow into it. But, you know, we're trying to keep it really small by design. You know, it's, you know, I have a lot of fighters reaching out to me now, even UFC fighters that are like, hey, I'd love to come and cross train. And, you know, we're being really picky with who we let in the gym and who we, you know, we want to kind of sink our teeth into as far as coaching. So, you know, it's tough, man, because you don't want to grow too fast and then, you know, I neglect these guys. And so we're staying small by design, but it's been fun, you know.
Okay, I think you answered my question, because I was going to ask, how big would you like the team to grow? I know the ATT team is hundreds, you know, at least 100 and plus some. That's a big gym with tons of coaches. And then I know, like, a team like Ray Longo, for example, keeps it tidy to about, it appears, maybe 10 or 12 guys. Sometimes on a small day they'll have six. Is that something of what you're looking for as opposed to those big teams that you see, you know, all over the United States?
Yeah, we build our camps around the fighter, not the fighter's camps around the gym. And that's kind of a strategy we employed a few years back. We tried to start practicing with Robin Calvin, and that's what's been working for us. So we're not trying to have a set practice time for the team to make the guys show up for that. You know, you, these guys, you know, Rob's a morning person. So we just, you know, we wrestled this morning at 8 a.m. You know, we're 3 days a week at 7 or 8 a.m. with him. And, you know, me and Calvin show up to that with the other coaches, and we get his work in. But when Calvin's in camp, he likes to stay up later and sleep in a little bit more. So our sessions are later in the morning for him. So it just depends on who's in camp, what we do. And I just don't. You know, there's growing pains when you get to those big camps, and those are for some people. But, you know, our belief and our methodology is a little different, and we want to kind of keep it small enough to where we can 100% service the guys, you know. Like, so you see some of these camps that, you know, the coaches either got so many guys in camp that he can't go out to fight week until, like, the night of the fight. And that kind of sucks for the guy who's fighting. But then you got – if you did go out for the whole fight week, now you got guys in camp who aren't getting coached by their coach. So it's tough. It's kind of a double-edged sword, you know, no way's right. So the way we choose to do is keep really small. That way I know I can be at their fight weeks. I can be at their whole camps. And, you know, they're getting all the attention to detail that they need.
You know, one of the divisions, the two divisions that Rob and Calvin belong to are just stacked divisions. And every week I feel like we're matchmaking for Rob, because his style is just the type of style that people want to see. It doesn't matter who you match him up against. It just becomes a good matchup because of his style. Can you tell us how close are we to getting a Rob Font announcement? And can you share any of that with us?
Yeah, I mean, all we know is we're fighting in May. We do have a name, but we're sworn to secrecy. And it's a big name. And we're just waiting on a date. Once the date, you know, once the UFC comes back, hey, this is the card you're fighting on, then I'm assuming it'll leak out probably through the other end, because I never really leak much out. And then everybody will be excited about it. But it's been a long time coming. You know, Rob's been, you know, he's on a, out of the, in the top six guys in the division. He's the only one on the 3-fight win streak now. You know, he's, unless, except for, I think Aljamain would be there. But aside from him, you know, he's the only one on a 3-fight win streak. And, you know, he's surrounded by champions. You got Aldo, Garbrandt, TJ, you know, and then San Hagen right above us, who's probably the hottest prospect in the division right now. And then us, you know, so this is all big names around us. You guys are going to be excited when you hear the name, but we're just waiting. So, you know, we're in camp. We know who we were training for. We're just waiting on a date so we can kind of tweak things based on peaking and stuff like that. But I honestly thought we'd have the date 2-3 weeks ago, but we don't. So I don't know what the hang up is. I know there's a lot of stuff that goes on the back end and booking these things. So we're, you know, our team motto is always just focus on what you can control. And right now, all we can control is getting ready, getting in shape for a day in May that, you know, will be locked in pretty soon.
Goes, hang on to your next question. I got to ask this. Can you give us a hint, coach?
I'll say it's a big name, but that doesn't really count, because like Goes said, like, we're in probably the most stacked division. You got former champ Jose Aldo, former champ Cody Garbrandt, former champ, well, now Petr Yan. You got champ Aljamain Sterling, former champ TJ Dillashaw, and then, you know, Corey Sandhagen. You know, so everybody around us is either the what people consider the deserving of the next title shot, or former champs and, you know, guys that are kind of legends in the sport. So regardless of who any of those guys, it's a huge fight. So I guess that's as much of a hint as I can give you.
All right, I'm gonna say that I think it was one of those names, but now just to complete it all, Dominic Cruz is also a former champ, so he's also, I guess, technically in the running, but I don't know why. I think it was in those names, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Somebody asked me about the Dominic Cruz fight, and that would be a great fight. But I just think, you know, he just beat a guy who was unranked by decision. He hasn't been super active. It would be an awesome fight. Like, we'd love to share a cage with him. You know, we tremendously respect him and everything he's done for the sport. I think he's a great commentator. But, yeah, I mean, when you just knock out the number three guy, you're sitting there at number three and trying to chase the title. I don't know if, you know, fighting Dominic Cruz is the fastest way to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, your group is such a tight-knit group, and you guys do so many things together. The process is always together. And I think about Calvin Kattar and what he just recently went through. Rob Font is kind of in that same situation. Now he's going, and he went through Calvin's journey together, right? So with Rob Font kind of being in that same situation, were there a lot of lessons that he could have taken from the entire experience being up there at the top, going through it with Calvin? Is that a learning process for Rob as well?
Yeah, Rob did a lot of learning over COVID when Calvin had a couple fights and he had his first main event against the Beat. Rob was in the corner for all those fights. He could make those walks. He got to see, you know, fighting the big scary guys. He got to see, you know, being the main event. You know, he got to, you know, experience fighting in COVID with no fans, you know, being the favorite, being the underdog. He's gotten to experience a lot of things that he wouldn't have if Calvin wasn't making that run. So, you know, by the time, you know, Rob came back from the ACL surgery, there was nothing new. It's like he'd been in the cage a few times, even though it wasn't himself. He'd made that walk. He'd been on a fight week. He did the, you know, the COVID fighting with no fans. So that was just old hat to him. And I think getting to see how the team dealt with, you know, kind of the newfound recognition for Calvin and the team, and Rob was part of that. I think it's just kind of old hat. I think it was a tremendous experience for him. You know, when he went in the into the Moraes fight, it was just like, all right, this is what we do. You know, I always say those guys leapfrog each other. Rob will get here, then Calvin, then Rob, then Calvin. And they just keep, you know, leapfrogging each other and pulling each other up. So it's great.
Coach, how is Calvin doing? I in no way want to am worried about when his next fight is. That was, you know, that fight took a toll on both fighters. And after a fight like that, you know, you want these guys to properly come back whenever they're ready. So I'm just checking in. How's his health and how's his spirits and his well-being?
He's good. So Calvin's really been in fight camp since before the Lamas fight. So like a year and a half, he's just been going from fight to fight to fight, you know, with dinged up hands, broken his nose three times. And, you know, he's just – he's been a beast, you know, dieting through holidays, dieting through birthdays, missing family events. And, you know, after that fight, you know, we could have tried to come back fast. You know, we could have done, you know, made the same mistake that I think other teams make and tried to push it, because there was really, you know, like no technical injuries or anything like that would have stopped us from being able to fight. But, you know, right after the fight, I said, listen, you earned a break, you know. So our plan was chill out, travel with your family, help, you know, help Rob mentally, you know, just kind of be there for the team and just take some time away from the gym. You know, he's still in the gym. He's still watching guys train. You know, we're not letting him do any contact training at all. I think our plan is, you know, I'm a very conservative, like I have a very conservative approach to, you know, coming back from these things. And so I'm saying 6 months, no contact at all. You know, we just, you know, cleared him to start jogging, you know, working very close to PI. And, you know, we've gotten a few MRIs at the fight. Everything is good, but we're still being super, super cautious and probably more conservative than the doctors would even require. Well, I know it's more conservative, but so our plan is going to wait till July, hit that 6 month mark, and then get a new, you know, a new MRI just to be safe and then get back to training slowly. And, you know, we'll just see how he progresses with it, you know, like a fight again in the fall. So he still gets two fights this year. He gets to rest his head for at least 6 months, probably more. And, you know, we're going to come back, you know, better. He's going to learn a lot from that fight. You know, his confidence didn't dwindle at all from that performance. If anything, it made him, you know, he got to feel that level of probably the best featherweight that's ever walked this earth. And realize that, you know, I kind of laid an egg. He fought really good. And, I felt it, and now I want to get there, you know. So I think it wasn't a discouraging experience. It was motivating. And, you know, I think when people see him come back this fall, they'll be, you know, just like Brian Ortega, that last loss is behind you and you're on to the next thing.
I was just about to say his name. Brian Ortega fought Max Holloway, took 2 years off, comes back, beats the Korean Zombie, and now he's in a title fight. So a lot of times it's timing. It's actually the timing as well of when you make your decision to come back, as well as coming back, winning, and then who you beat. So yeah, man, there's no hurry. You know, we've already established he's one of the top five in the world. Now it's just a matter of when to come back, when he's ready. But we know that that there's a blueprint there where if the timing's right and you beat the right guy, you may even find yourself in a title fight. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but it's a good example of, and it's right within his own division.
Yep. So I think it's, you know, the fight sucked, you know. Like, you come back, you have to applaud Max's team, and it's, you know, it sucks that the fight went how it did, but you know, it only sucks if you don't learn from it and come back better. So that's what our plan is to do. We're gonna, like I said, we're gonna take a conservative approach, and when we come back, we know Calvin will be 100%, and you know, he'll have some sharper weapons, and we'll be ready to go.
Coach, you were probably a young guy when Marvelous Marvin Hagler was doing his thing, but you are a guy from the New England area. He was from Brockton, Massachusetts. Do you have any thoughts on Marvin Hagler? Do you have any memories of Marvin Hagler, who passed away on Saturday?
No, I mean, I didn't really get into boxing until like when I was like six, and Mike Tyson was the champion, and it was just because he had the same name as me. So I thought it was like cool to call him, but I was never like into boxing really big. So even now, like every now and then I'll watch a boxing fight. I'm not a big boxing fan. I hate to say that, but you know, anytime someone passes though, it's unfortunate. And you know, you kind of get to relive what people are saying about him. I keep seeing newspaper articles or articles on the internet about, you know, things he's done and stuff like that. So I think I'm finally, you know, getting to learn a little bit more about him now. But yeah, I mean, sounds like he was pretty well liked. Like I said, I'm not the guy to ask about boxing, even though he's from New England.
Gotcha. All right. Well, listen, in the meantime, it was great to catch up with you and you updating us on the cartel. We are definitely anxious to hear Rob's next opponent, but you've already told us in May he'll be doing the dance. He definitely deserves one of those great names that you named, if it's one of them. And when we get to it, then hopefully we can have you guys back on to preview that fight. And as for Calvin, please tell him we said hello, and can't wait to see what's next for him later on this year as well.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you.
Thanks, guys.
There you go, folks. Coach Tyson Chartier, MMA Junkies 2020 Co-Coach of the Year, along with Eric Nixick. Goes, before we get to our next guest, Mark Ratner, the Vice President of Government and Regulatory Affairs for the UFC. I did get a quick text from Ken Ioli. Him and I had been chatting about Marvin Hagler. And just to make it quick, because I don't want to keep Mark waiting, Marvin Hagler's wife told Kevin that he did not pass away from a reaction to the vaccine. And remember, I told you that there was a rumor floating out there that he had had a bad reaction to the Moderna vaccine. That indeed is not the case, according to Marvin Hagler's wife. And she relayed that to Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports, who just told me that during this interview here. So just passing it along. And in fact, there's a statement that if you guys want me to, I can read off. But tell you what, we'll be right back. Our next guest is Mark Ratner from the UFC. All right, I want to welcome to MMA Junkie Radio the legend of combat sports, Mark Ratner. How you doing, Mark?
I'm very good. I'm delighted to be on there, and I'm even more impressed that I'm on my laptop or desktop instead of my phone, so I did good.
Very cool. All right, so Mr. Ratner, of course, we want to talk about Marvin Hagler. He recently passed away on Saturday. Terrible to hear of anybody's passing, you know, but some of these sports heroes, sometimes there's a little extra hurt, especially because right away it brings back a gush of memories of, you know, why we came to think so highly of them and what they accomplished. We don't really get to know a lot of them personally. Some of them you have, but us, like, all I can think of is those three rounds with Thomas Hearns, that epic fight with Sugar Ray Leonard, him trading blows with John the Beast Mugabe, the Durant. I mean, you know, there's a lot of them for me, but for you, I'm sure it was a very difficult news to take on Saturday. Can you give us your thoughts on Marvin Hagler as not only a competitor, but a human being?
Yeah, he was, what a great fighter. And there's still to this day, a lot of people think that he beat Ray Leonard. I was working in Ray Leonard's corner as the inspector. So I was biased just being in there listening to Angelo Dundee. But in watching the fight again, I can see where Ray stole some of the rounds. One judge was way off. I think he had it 10 rounds to five. Or it was so far away that I couldn't believe it. Something 118 to something, but anyway, it was a Yeah, it was a bittersweet. Last time I saw him was at the International Boxing Hall of Fame, and he was always very sweet to me and congratulated me on becoming a member. Just never fought again from that time. The fight everybody remembers, obviously, is the Hearns fight and the Leonard fight, but you brought up John the Beast Mugabe. What a tough guy he was, and that was a great fight, too. And he fought Beto Annapurna, got a bad decision, got a draw there. I thought he won that fight. So, but I have a strange, lasting memory of the Leonard fight, and that was, it's weird. I mean, I think of the whole fight, but his ring walk, and I wrote this on Facebook or Twitter or something. He came into Edwin Starr's music, War, What Is It Good For? And it was such a perfect song for him to come into outside at Caesars, which is still the best venue I've ever worked in. And, mm-hmm. And I remember that song so clearly with him walking in.
Yeah, I saw that post. And just a recap of a few things you said. I've watched that fight a lot of times. I'm sure you have too. I score it probably more for Leonard. I think of the 10 times I watched it, I gave Leonard eight or nine of those. I just thought, like you said, he stole rounds. But he didn't run and dance. He exchanged with Marvin Hagler. Of course, I'm a big, big Leonard fan, but he really did throw down with Marvin Hagler, except at times he did have to stick and move because you can't just sit there and trade with the heavy hitting Hagler. But I think he ran. I thought that was unfair when people would say, oh, Leonard just ran too.
The fascinating other part for me that night was I'm in Ray's dressing room, and for a long time it was Angelo, Ray, and myself, because I'm watching him have his hands wrapped. And I think now he's probably an older man, obviously, but little Ray was in there too. So he had just made a 7-Up commercial. I remember that. And it was very intense. And it was in the old Caesars Pavilion. And all there was between Hagler and Leonard was a plasterboard wall. And so you could hear each other guy, and they were yelling through the walls, and Angela was yelling at Hagler that he was going to get beat. And, those are the memories I have.
That's crazy. That's some smack talk right there. I love it. Right through the walls. Would you put Marvelous Marvin Hagler right up there with other great middleweights like Sugar Ray Robinson and Carlos Monzon, I believe is his name? Would you rate him right up there with those guys? How would you compare him with some of the other great middleweights?
Well, he absolutely, I would say when it comes to middleweights, yes. I would put him up there with, I think as I think about it, Carlos Monzon was tremendous. Ray Robinson to this day is still my favorite fighter. And Ray Robinson very hot as a welterweight too. So, Marvin was... you got to remember, in the first 20 fights of his career, nobody would fight him, and he was held back, and it took him a long time to even get to the championship level. It's just too bad he didn't fight again. I would have loved to have seen that rematch.
Mark, these particular moments that we see here in that you share with us in boxing that stay in your heart and your memory, have you already kind of, you don't have to share them, but have you already established them within mixed martial arts? Have those kind of been engraved in your soul as well, equally?
Well, when you look at boxing, you look at MMA is still a pretty new sport. And when we discussed this a little bit last night, as I thought about it today, I guess the fight that's the most important fight for a lot of reasons was the opener of our whole with Forrest Griffin and that big fight that was our Trojan horse, as we called it. And that was a very important fight and action-packed. And, I think about that fight.
What would you say separated Marvin Hagler from the other boxers? That one unique characteristic that he carried that just wasn't maybe part of everybody else's aura?
I would say his determination, his fierceness, just his whole look. But he came forward the whole time. He was I call him a fighter's fighter. He wasn't dancing around. He just came to fight, and I just admired him very much. And he was more of a left hand fighter than he was more of a southpaw. So I found him very special. And I go back, obviously everybody loved the Hearns fight, and that was as tough a fight as you'll ever see. But it's pretty special.
Well, definitely nobody had a better seat than you did for these fights. Now, so jealous of that ticket that you posted up.
How would I know to save things for 50 years? Yeah. That was 35 years ago. But like, I got it. I have it on my desk here.
Like, I haven't seen enough Mark Ratner gems, and then I saw that one. And then, of course, hearing this story about them yelling through the walls and so crazy, you know, that you've been able to be up close like that. And then even when you said the Caesars Pavilion, I was there and I got to see pro wrestling there. And what a special place. And I hope now that Las Vegas is kind of opening things up, someone comes up with maybe some sort of an idea to do something like that again. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I think for the most part, with the exception of old fan man crashing the party, you like the outdoor boxing. It made sense, right? This is the perfect wet city with the type of weather, especially the months of like May to September where it can happen.
Oh, absolutely. There was just a special aura. It was just such an iconic place. And we saw so many great fights, even Ali Holmes fought there. And I just think of all that. We also had outdoor venues at the Hilton and the Dunes. So but not since then. But Caesars was special.
We wanted to ask you a few questions about MMA. What's that?
Okay. Even the Mirage had Duran and Leonard fight there to open it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Tyson and Razor Ruddock fought outdoors at the Mirage, right?
I believe they did, and absolutely. The Pavilion was just a small place. I saw Holmes fight Norton there, and I think it was a 15-round fight. So, it was a tennis pavilion that was great for boxing.
Technically, when the UFC has a show at Allegiant Stadium, they can still open up the roof, and we'll have technically an outdoor venue that particularly night. So maybe we'll have a little bit of a taste of it then.
Yeah, that's a big place. It has to be the right fight, but I would love for us to go there. The stadium is so, so beautiful inside. I don't know if you guys have been able to walk through it yet, but it's very special. I was able to work all 8 Raider games in a position in the press box, and it's a marvelous place to be.
We look forward to it. Switching to MMA, wanted to ask you about, you know, these last few weeks, starting with the Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling fight, and then, of course, this past Saturday we had Eric Anders, Darren Stewart, Leon Edwards, and Bilal Muhammad. So one by one with Yan and Sterling, I've already heard you state that you feel like the way it was handled was correct. Peter Yan was disqualified because of an intentional blow, the illegal knee. So the key word being intentional, that's basically once the foul's committed, the most important thing, aside from when it happened, whether we're going to get to the scorecards or not, if it's an accidental, we start the flow chart with accidental and intentional, correct?
What we start with is a referee's judgment. That's the most important thing. And he's going to determine in his mind whether it was intentional or accidental, and it certainly changes the way the fight scored or the outcome. In the Yan fight, Mark Smith was the referee, and he felt that the knee was intentional, and therefore, because Sterling couldn't go forward, that became a disqualification.
Go ahead, finish, sir.
And the difference in last Saturday's fight was that Herb Dean felt that maybe the fighter that the big football player who landed the knee, and the other fighter was putting his hand up and down and might have baited him into that knee, and he felt it was an accident, and therefore it became a no contest or no decision. And if it would have went to the 2 rounds full, we would have went to the scorecards.
Okay, so back to the Yan and Aljamain Sterling fight. In that one, his knee was down for a long time. Now, if we're all sitting around, us three, Mark Smith, a few other hardcores, we'd all come to the conclusion of, come on, why would Peter Yan intentionally knee him and risk his belt? I mean, and it's true, really, it's hard to believe that he would, but in my opinion, like, negligence and ignorance towards the rules, whether it's not knowing them pre-fight or being in a fog because of the fight at that time, at that particular moment, just not thinking clearly, I don't think that should excuse you from the fact that it was as blatant as can be. And at that point in time, the other fighters compromised. It seems like that is the only way to go, is to disqualify a fighter like Peter Yan. Would you not agree? I mean, it'd be hard to paint that as accidental.
I completely agree. Absolutely. I would say that Aljamain's knee was down for, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds. There was no question it wasn't coming up. He hit him in the head and kneed him in the head. And right from the beginning, I knew it was going to be a DQ. I was thinking that way, and that was the correct decision.
Do you think that the unified rules of MMA need to be a little bit more specific? Like, I was reading them this morning again, and they kind of describe what can happen, but it seems like there's just a lot of confusion to the fans, the media, even some of the fighters themselves. They'll even say it, man, we don't know all the rules or whatever. Do you think there needs to be more explicit set of rules in MMA or an amendment that kind of covers this? Because this interpretation thing is kind of, I think, what's really, really confusing people. Big John McCarthy said on his podcast that he would have said it was accidental and that he would have gone to the judges' scorecards. You know, we have two highly respected men that have, I say have, John's no longer reffing, but he's ref thousands of fights. This was Mark's first title fight, but he's ref a lot of MMA fights. We put him in that position for a reason, but yet they have a difference of opinion on intentional and accidental. So with the wording in the unified rules, could that be a little bit more specific so that there's, like, no doubt?
I don't believe so. I think you have a gray area there. You're always going to have a judgment call in any sports. And it's to put it in black and white and say, this is going to be accidental, it's going to be intentional. Can you read intent? That's really the question. And as John thought that he didn't do it on purpose, and therefore we would have went to the scorecard scoring the partial round in the fourth round. I don't think it'll ever be clear. I don't know how you can make it in writing saying that you wouldn't be able to use judgment. I would be, I don't know. I read those rules, and there is some gray area there, and I think it would be hard to say that you can definitively say black and white that this was intentional, this was accidental.
Is that particular rule written to how, for example, if you were to write it, how you would write it, or is there anything that you would add to it?
You know, I'd have to reread it and put my thoughts down. But what I would say is the way it's written, if you deem it's an intentional foul and the fighter can't continue, then you lose by disqualification. That's where the judgment comes in. I don't think that you can I don't think you can write it in a better way. Now, there's people who are smarter than me. Maybe they can. I would like to see it. But you cannot take judgment out of officiating in any sport.
Why is the referee there's a sequence where they'll bring the doctor in to see if they're okay to continue. We entrust these referees to stop fights on a dime when somebody isn't, based on their experience and knowledge of some of them even fighting themselves, but basically reffing a lot of fights and being able to see if a fighter can continue. Some stop it early from time to time, some stop it late from time to time, but 99% of the time, maybe 95, whatever, they get it right. Is it more of just because that's what the commission rules state? Like, it seems like the doctor asking, are you okay, are you okay? To me, it almost seems like it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, you could tell Sterling wasn't going to be able to continue in that fight. Do you think the referee maybe should kind of, again, going back to the flow chart, almost get away from the doctor having to give an opinion, and maybe his opinion weighing more than the doctor's, whether he thinks the fighter should be able to continue or not.
My belief, if a fighter is compromised with a what I would call a closed head injury, possibly a concussion, that you cannot let the fighter go forward. And I would like the doctors to make a real quick decision. Don't ask the fighter to go on. A lot of fighters would say yes, and because they don't want to go out that way. And doesn't matter what the fighter says. I want the doctors to be more definitive. And I'm certainly not an educated doctor guy, but when I see a person compromised, I just soon stop the fight right away. Don't vacillate and have them make a decision. Can you walk? Can you fight again? I think that's wrong.
Mark, you've been a part of a lot of sports, and you're a big sports fan. These things happen in every sport. Every sport has these type of situations that go on. So I guess my question to you is, when it comes to mixed martial arts and these situations, everybody has an opinion, everybody has a solution, but is there a bit of an overreaction? Because this does happen in a lot of sports. And do you feel like there has to be major change, just a tweak here and there, or is it just kind of on the fighters?
Well, I think that the rules are always evolving. We've been working on getting a glove that's a little more curved so you won't have eye pokes. It's not that easy because you still want to be able to wrestle. But we're constantly looking at the rules, trying to make the judging a little more definitive. It's still a new sport, like I said. It's really... when the UFC was bought by the Fertittas, it was in 2001, just 20 years ago. So we still got to be constantly evolving, but I think we can learn. What made this so different was we had two weeks in a row where there was an illegal knee. So therefore, the whole world gets the whole MMA world starts thinking about this stuff. So there is a little bit of an overreaction. Yes.
I know you got to get going soon. This is the last question, but like, for example, yes. In NBA, I know that if I'm on the bench and a fight breaks out, the minute I leave that bench area, I can get ejected. Or in the NFL, before a play is even done, if I grab your face mask in a certain way, I can get a 15 yard penalty. Why is it that we know the fighters, when they walk in, they know the rules, and then the commission officials along with the refs come in to reiterate the rules? Do you think we need this soft warning and we can just get to the stern warning or maybe even the point deduction? Because these fingers, it seems like the fighters are going to push the limits, and then eventually we get to the one that really hurts the fighter and they just can't continue. Do you like that process of soft warning, stern warnings, point deduction, I guess what I'm getting at is, could the fighters just get used to just always having their hands closed and not having them point up or do this or do that?
Well, the way the gloves are designed, it would be pretty hard to keep your hands closed the whole time and be able to wrestle. I do believe that hard warnings should be given in the dressing room and say, okay, I'm not going to warn you during the fight. I'm telling you right now, don't grab the fence. If you're leading with your fingers out there, I can take a point. I want you to know that. So this is a hard warning. So think about this stuff very clearly. Now, sometimes you have language barriers, and you're hoping that the Portuguese is clear enough that their interpreters tell them these things. But that's the part you don't know. We have a lot of international fighters now. But there's no excuse for breaking the rules. They all know the rules. So... just have to enforce them, and not every referee is going to enforce it the same way.
They're definitely going to have to learn the rules. If every pilot around the world who speaks different languages knows the language of English, because that's what the people at the tower communicate in, then the fighters and the coaches are going to have to learn those specific verbiage, you know, of the language that these fights are being reffed in, which is English. So they can do it. I mean, I think we can all do it. You know, hopefully that curved glove is something that's coming sooner rather than later from you guys.
Yeah, we're working on it. And just as a quick pivot, I was able to run the clock for a couple tournaments this week in basketball, and Gonzaga is pretty special.
Yeah, I was going to ask him that.
We can talk about my other call, so if you want to, we can.
Oh, okay. A little overtime here. All right. So have you already filled out a bracket? You got your final four, Gonzaga, and who else?
Well, first of all, as a NCAA clock operator, I can't fill out the brackets. But it's pretty hard to go against the chalk in most regions. And but the team that there's two teams that I got to see in person this week that I felt may surprise. BYU is a pretty good ball club, and they have a 7'2", 7'3" player that really looked good against Gonzaga. And Santa Barbara in the Big West could surprise a little bit, at least can win the first game, I think. So it's great to have tournaments back. I wish we would have had fans, and we will, but I'm anxious to watch the tournament. But the one thing I object to when they say that Indianapolis is a great place, there's no better place than having it here with all the first-class hotel rooms, all the great venues we have, whether it's Mandalay, where MGM, the Orleans, T-Mobile, Thomas and Mack. We could have had this tournament real easy right here in Las Vegas.
I agree. The NBA bubble could have occurred here as well. I was hoping it was going to be here last year too, but they went to Orlando. Though they pulled it off.
They did.
But when it comes to March Madness, entering that tournament, what do you think is the one intangible that you would stress if you were a coach? Does it come down to, is it the discipline teams that always win? What's that like one intangible?
It seems to me that it's a team that's been together with their guards, maybe their third year or seniors. I think that makes a big difference in the tournament that they've been together instead of guys who are going to be one and out. Now, you're always going to have some teams that are with playing 1 year. But teams that have been together a little bit longer seem like they can get through the early rounds. It's a special tournament, and I'm looking forward to it. How about Michigan State and UCLA as a play-in game?
I know.
Pretty crazy.
It's always more special, the tournament here in Vegas, when the UNLV Rebels are involved. When are we going to get back into that tournament? Now we've seen a little bit more of TJ Osselberger, but it's a little tough because of COVID and what went on. But do you feel like we're on that track? There's a lot of big recruits possibly coming in. Do you think we can get into that tournament as early as next year?
Well, they need another big guy. I don't know if DeJong will be back or not. They had a senior night for him, but all these kids can get an extra year now. So that sort of messes up with your recruiting if they all stay. I don't know how it'll work. But I think they're on the rise. But I miss us winning here. And I know it's not 1990 or 1991 anymore. but it's time. We should be every bit as good as San Diego State or any of the top teams in the Mountain West. Should not just be a mid Mountain West team. I want to see us in the upper part of it, and playing good enough to get in the tournament.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to that game, they don't have to travel this year. And, you know, Gus asked that question about what's important. I think if you're streaking, it's very, very important to just get hot at the right time. And with those teams not having to travel, that play-in game, the winners coming out of that are just going to be, maybe one game more fluid than the possible opponent. So keep an eye on those write-in games this year.
Oh, no, absolutely. No travel, and they'll be in Indy. And, they're attractive matchups. I don't have the bracket in front of me, but I think that the winner of Michigan State, UCLA, might be playing BYU.
Oh, wow. Okay. And going back to what you were saying, because of your involvement with the NCAA, have you just never filled out an MBA? Have you just never done an NCAA bracket with friends, or were you able to get one done earlier, in your earlier years? Were they even popular back then?
Well, I've been the shot clock operator for UNLV 30 plus years, so I haven't done it in a long time. I always have my favorites. What I used to do, we would have contests and you could pick players, and as soon as you got the brackets, and whoever scored the most points And so you had to figure out that whatever your final four would be, you want somebody on those teams. And so you can, it's a real tough contest. You get six players, and whoever gets the most points out of all these, you have a draft. I don't know if they even do that anymore, but it's a pretty cool way of doing it. You really have to know all the players and all the teams, and you have to study and trivia. It's actually before its time. I don't know if they can still do that or not, but you could.
Since you still have time, can I ask you a question about when do you think they'll fight in that stadium, Allegiant Stadium and T-Mobile, if you had to take a guess? I imagine you still work with these commissions. The commissions work with under the guidelines of a particular state. We heard that Texas was almost a go, but then it didn't happen. But do you have any of that knowledge as well that you can share as far as a gut feeling, you know, first the T-Mobile and then Allegiant Stadium?
Well, I believe today the governor is making 50% occupancy for restaurants. And I would think, hopefully, by the end of the year that they could go, or at least maybe for football, starting with the NFL, maybe they'll open it up completely. I'm anxious to see, really, right now, Garth Brooks is scheduled for July 10th at Allegiant, if they'll let him have the 60,000 tickets they sold. That'll be a good test for us to know in the future.
I got one more. Are you still okay on time?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay. Update us again, because when they ask Dana, he'll kind of say, well, the rain and an open stadium and this and that and whatever. Hawaii, I know that you guys are basically, the show can be taken to any state in the United States and any province of Canada. That was the work of Mark Ratner, who got that done, including two dozen trips to Albany, a city he never thought he'd visit two dozen times. But update us on Hawaii. They have the Blaisdell Arena, like 8,000. I believe the university has a 15,000-seat arena. And then, of course, the big Aloha Stadium if they wanted to do a stadium show. This is going back to the BJ Penn days. But now we have the Max Holloway days still. You know, guy looked tremendous in his last fight. Sounds like he'll probably get the winner of Ortega and Volkanovski. Can you update us on when do you think that can happen? If it can really happen, or is there just something there that we don't know behind the scenes that makes you say, George, it ain't ever going to happen?
Oh, no, I would never say that. I think that it's a natural for us. We'd love to do a fight with Max there. We are talking to the Convention and Tourist Bureau there to see what we can do. We've been talking to them for the last 18 months. So it's definitely can happen. I don't know what their protocols are right now, so it won't be happening this year. But yes, we would love to go there. And I've refereed in Aloha Stadium. I've been in Blaisdell. There's another one, like you said, at the University of Hawaii. I think it holds around 12,000. So we could do a show there. But if we go there, we would probably go to Aloha if, in fact, the protocols are right when we do it, and we can make some kind of deal with the tourism committee.
Well, we look forward to it. And I guess you're right. First things first, we need to get through what we're going through right now.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be at the Mandalay Bay with us. But
the Mandalay Bay for hoops is a pretty special court. Whether it's the Aces or this tournament we just had there, it really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Can't wait. I can't wait. We're ready. We're vaccinated, and hopefully you are as well.
I had my second shot 3 weeks ago, so I'm ready to travel whenever we get a fight. Maybe not in Abu Dhabi, but if we do it domestically, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, as always, for another visit to MMA Junkie Radio, where we covered a lot. It's always great to have you, and hopefully we can do it again soon. And because there's so many sports that are going to open up, and you're always a wealth of knowledge, not just in combat sports, but all sports.
Well, thanks. And I was remiss. I didn't mention Steph. I was thinking Forrest Griffin, but Stephen Bonner Griffin was the fight I was thinking of, which is sort of our Hagler, Hearns, Hagler Leonard type thing.
Yeah, they went three hard rounds, man. And you can watch that fight 100 times and score it for somebody else. Now, in the Hagler Hearns, we obviously had our finish, but it was the three rounds matches up perfectly. So, yep. All right. Well, thank you again, sir, for your time.
So long.
All right. We'll talk to you. But there he goes, folks. Mark Ratner. Always an interesting chat with him, Huggos.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, Mark is one of those people that in Las Vegas, when you don't see his face in Las Vegas, you don't feel like you're in Las Vegas. I think his face is one of those things when you see him, you're going to start to feel normal. There's certain things you do in Las Vegas, go to a buffet or something where you start to feel normal again. Seeing Mark's face and talking to him is just one of those experiences that with everything that's happened, I think we're going to start to feel normal again when we get to see him around.
Guy's got a lot of cool jobs. He's refereed college football, high school football, and then he's done a lot of scorekeeping for college hoops. Now the Raiders, we found out he's not a scorekeeper there, but he didn't share it on today's show, but I can tell you he's actually the one that shuts off the mics that communicate the offensive coordinators to the quarterbacks. You have a certain amount of time where you can communicate. I believe the offense and the defense have to get equal time, and so he'll shut them both off at a certain time before within the 35 or 40 second clock or whatever it is that they're using. So but just being there, man, just being there, like, and having those responsibilities, that's really, really cool. And then of course many times you'll see him overseeing a UFC event overseas where they don't have an established commission. So like I say, the guy's done it all. And he's very deserving of all of the Hall of Fames in which he's a member of, including the Nevada Hall of Fame, the Boxing Hall of Fame, and now the UFC Hall of Fame, which hasn't happened yet, but we already know he'll be inducted. So all praise to Mark Ranner, seriously. Tremendous fella, too. Just a great human being.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, that's our show for today, folks. Sorry we went a little long. I don't think you're hating us for it. I do want to read, goes, can I just read this statement since I teased it earlier and it won't take me too long? This is from Marvin Hagler's wife, K.G. Hagler. She said, I would like to speak with my heart to all of you. I apologize if English is not written correctly, but I hope everyone understands me in this difficult moment. After 31 years, the love of my life is gone and my life without him no longer makes sense. But I can feel him next to me even now. And he's telling me not to give up and to be strong for him. Thank you for your love. He loved people so much. He loved you all. He was happy when he read your comments. He was a special person, the most beautiful person I had ever met in my life. I was the only person close to him at the last minute, and I am the only person that knows how things went. Not even his family know all the details, and I do not accept to read some stupid comment without knowing really what happened. For sure, it wasn't the vaccine that caused his death. My baby left in peace with his usually smile, I probably say usual smile, and not now is not the time to talk nonsense. Marvin hated funerals, and therefore there will be no funerals or church celebrations. He wants to be remembered with a happy smile, but I would be happy if each of you can light a candle for him. However, there is something special that I will do because it was his wishes, and you will be informed at the right time by me. I just need time. So there you have it, straight from his wife. Randy Gordon had kind of done a tribute because he knew Marvin Hagler. And on one of his posts, I don't want to say the name, but somebody wrote, I heard it was a bad reaction to Moderna. And because I'd been talking to Kevin Ioli about vaccines and things like that, I asked him, did you hear this one? And he said, I'm still investigating. And that's why he was able to shoot me that message early today. Dude, it kind of hit home. I mean, we just had taken our parents to go get their Moderna. Marvin Hagler was 68. Our parents are 76 and 78. I didn't say who, but they're 76 and 78. So they're not much older than Marvin Hagler. And of course, when Marvin Hagler passed away on Saturday, our parents were 4 days removed from their second one. So tomorrow they'll actually be at full strength. They call it 94.5%. But when I read that, I just, for a second there, it goes, my heart kind of raced. I was like, whoa, you know? That wasn't the case, at least as far as what his wife said. So there you have it. Either way, it's a tremendous loss for boxing, and we're left with his memories. So anyway, we'll be back on Thursday with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. As always, we're here on Sportscaster Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, so join us for the ride. I want to thank our guests today, Tyson Chartier, coach to Rob Font, Calvin Cater. They're the New England Cartel. And He's also the 2020 MMA Junkie Co-Coach of the Year, and as well to Mark Radner, who we just closed off with right now, the UFC's Vice President of Governmental and Regulatory Affairs, former Nevada State Athletic Executive Chairman, as well as he was one of the members of their commission before he became chairman. That's why he was in the corner. Remember I said, I wasn't sure if he was executive chairman at the time. He was in the corner or working with Leonard when he fought Hagler. So still jealous is the best word, honestly, of his story and the position where he was for that fight. Just goes to show, man, if you really have a dream and you want to do something, go out and just do it. Where do I start? How do I work my way up? You know, and maybe you can be in the position that Mark Radner was. Folks, again, we're out of here. We'll talk to you soon. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got more fights headed your way. And on the 27th, a watch along for UFC 260. But more on that Thursday. For now, we're going to exit. So go out there and be a champion.